Welcome to the Land and Everything Else podcast. This is Dr. Craig Lemoyne, along with Ailey Elmore. Please join us as we learn about investing from dirt to derivatives. The Land and Everything Else podcast is brought to you by the College of Agriculture, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences and the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Economics at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. We are thrilled to have you with us today and hope you learn more about alternative investments. Derek, thank you so much for joining us on the Land and Everything Else podcast. We are so happy to have you today, and we're going to be talking about non-stock and bond investing, and we're going to be getting into how investment advisors and consumers can benefit in alts, and I'm so happy to have you. So I was wondering if you could introduce yourself a little bit, what you do at BUC. And
sure, Craig. Thanks. We have about $12 billion in assets at BUC Wealth Management, and my official title is Director of Investment Strategy and Research, which means basically I do four things. I'm an asset allocator, so I'm in charge of the model portfolios that we manage for our fully discretionary clients and what they invest in stocks, bonds, and alternatives.
Sure.
I also do risk management, which often goes along with the asset allocation portion. I also do manager selection, both of managers external to BUC. BUC manages its own core equities and fixed income in the U.S., but everything else is done externally in public markets and then also in private markets. And so private markets are the fourth thing I do. And it's a growing part of our business because, like a lot of people, we're interested in alternatives, right? But also, you know, for clients who have larger dollar amounts, it appears that alternative investments are table stakes for their portfolios. So we have to raise our game.
Okay. So I kind of want to just dive on in with you because there's so much to talk about in your role and in this space. And we do really appreciate you being here. I guess let's just kind of start with, you know, where you've seen the evolution of alternative investments used in kind of that retail consumer space. If you could talk a little bit about over your career, have you seen it pick up? Has it always been there? What's your perspective on that?
I think there are two big watershed moments for alternatives for individual investors or, as you mentioned, retail clients. Mm-hmm. I mean, institutional investors have increasingly done, you know, alternatives, especially endowments, and if you want to think of family offices as more institutional, they've always been investing in alternatives and in increasing fashion with some success. But there were two really watershed moments for retail or individual investors. One was the financial crisis around 2008, where just about everything that was risky and even the things that were highly engineered and were supposed to be less risky became risky everywhere all at once.
Sure. Okay.
And so people were looking for alternatives to that, right? And and lower risk alternatives that maybe were different from what the stock market offered. Okay. As it happens, the stock market came roaring back. So the recovery in the stock market has sort of left some of those strategies that were minted at that time and people were interested in the dust a bit. And so performance hasn't been as good, which we can discuss. And then the second watershed moment was zero interest rates, where people, you know, gradually since 2009 and you know, until about a year or two ago, were looking for income or even other types of returns that were non-zero, right? And so now that those interest rates are higher, people have, and we have done the same, we've unwound some of the alternatives investing that we did, you know, 3 to 5 years ago because simply interest rates are higher.
So when we get into those two sort of watershed moments, within the world of alts, I was wondering if you could share a little bit, or you looking at, you know, private equity, private debt, private equity funds, like what type of alternative investments have you seen, I would say, roar back? Maybe let's be current, right? As interest rates have started ticking up, what tends to be a little more popular? What have you guys been investing in a little bit?
Well, I think it's important to make a definition between illiquid and liquid alternatives.
Fantastic.
Okay. Yeah, so in the illiquid space, you're talking about the stuff that endowments, foundations, family offices have been investing in increasingly as a crescendo, right, for the last 20 or 30 years.
Sure.
And that also would include hedge funds, but we can talk about that a little separately, I think. Because when you think about what alternatives are and defining it in those watershed moments, you know, anything that's different from traditional stocks or bonds, well, that would be for illiquid alternatives, private equity, private debt, private real estate, and private real assets. Those are typically kind of the categories that I would think about that way. These are higher fee. They almost all use leverage, right?
Right.
And to some extent, there's still really implementations of what's available in public markets, just with more leverage, perhaps with more skill. And the level of illiquidity means they can get deeper into buying and managing companies. And they've done so successfully. And the performance of these has generally been quite good.
Yeah.
So for the sell for private equity for a lot of people, and the reason that private equity has been increasingly popular, is that it's outperformed public equities pretty much on a sustained basis since inception. It's riskier in a way, but it also looks less risky than public equities to people. So it's kind of like the old tagline, which is taste great and less filling, right?
Yeah.
Who wouldn't want to sell something like that?
Sure.
And why wouldn't that be successful? Now, it may not be less risky, okay? It looks less risky generally because it's illiquid.
Right.
But it certainly has provided the performance, even net of fees, that's been better than what's available in public markets. Now, that may not be true forever. And it certainly may not be true in the future. And there's a wide variance between companies. So we could talk about that too, which is that, you know, when you buy a mutual fund in US stock market, for instance, the spread of potential returns, if you have good or bad performance, is pretty narrow.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas for, you know, illiquid alternatives in particular, but alternatives in general, the spreads can be very wide, right? So we all know some of the names that are really successful private alternative investment operators, the trillion-dollar firms, right? Like the Blackstones and the KKRs and so on and so forth, right? Those are the ones who've been at it for a long time and been very successful. There are many others that fail, okay? And there are, that goes for funds and that goes for companies.
Sure.
So it really helps to be choosy.
And I think I'd like to kind of follow up on that, on the being choosy part, right? You know, we look at a June 2023 Journal of Financial Planning article, and it interviews 191, you know, certified financial planners in that investment advisor space. So we're not talking institutional. We're not really talking that, you know, CFA management level, but the CFP world. Mm-hmm. And we say, okay, you know, one of the biggest drawbacks of the people in the survey that aren't using alts,
yes,
right, was the legal and tax complexity. But then one of the other ones was like a lack of public data, lack of ability to sort, like a lack of ability to discern, right? It's pretty easy, and easy is probably not the right word, but there's a lot of passive ETF space, right? So I build the allocation, I fill it as cheap as I can.
Yes.
And then for most consumers, that may be the end of the story,
yes,
right? And I make some changes as we go. Do you work with farming, ranching, or agribusiness clients? Do you want to help farm and ranch families ensure their business success into the next generation? Are you ready to build relationships that will last a lifetime? The agriculture-focused financial planner designation at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign will help you develop the skills you need to better serve the farming, ranching, and agriculture community. This booming market relies on competent and skillful financial professionals to achieve its goals of farm families. The AFFP designation teaches you about crop insurance, legacy planning, social security for farmers, and other topics critical to serving these communities. Find out more information about the AFFP at affp.illinois.edu or search for agriculture-focused financial planner on your favorite browser. But when it comes to private equity or comes to private debt, how do we start discerning? What processes are in play to say, we want to buy this and we want to buy $1 billion of it? Or we want to buy this, maybe a little bit of it, or we, you know, there's some flex. Like, what processes have y'all put in place? Are you familiar with that maybe could help our viewers out there?
Well, there are service providers that help.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
So the vast majority of private investing that's done by financial advisors on behalf of their clients relies on so-called platforms that redistribute
right.
access to these or provide access to these strategies like iCapital, Case,
right.
Conway, et cetera. There mm-hmm. are a number of these. And they provide due diligence, either that they generate or that they source from a third party, that can help people become familiar with these strategies.
Sure.
That due diligence wouldn't necessarily lead to superior outcomes, obviously. Right. But at least it is due diligence. What do those due diligences and what do we do in terms of when we look at these types of
yeah.
vehicles? We look at, you know, previous track records, which are helpful. We look at the terms of these vehicles, which are really important. Who gets what distribution and when, how people get paid and how much for providing. And, you know, we look at the investment process and hope that it's and desire in our selection of these managers that it's well-grounded, based on their experience, practically useful, and that the investment opportunity is attractive. Okay. I hope that it will work out well in the choices that we make. One of the issues with some of this alternative investing is you make a multi-year commitment. There are different structures, so you can enjoy perpetual funds if you want to do that, that you can get in and out of more easily and so on. But the really good stuff requires a lockup for a period of time. And so you may not actually know if an individual decision was successful for 5 or 10 years.
Okay. Well, you're making more than one though, right?
So that's correct.
You've got that covered. So switching gears just a little bit, we talked about illiquid alts, but when we talk about liquid alts, right, what comes to mind and how do we use those? Or how are y'all using those?
A lot of liquid alts are sort of pale imitations of the illiquid alts, right? And I don't mean to say that to denigrate them. They're pale because they have stronger regulatory constraints, okay? So if you buy an illiquid strategy that's modeled after, say, a hedge fund strategy, or sorry, if you buy a liquid strategy that's modeled after a hedge fund strategy, the SEC says that if it's in a 40 Act mutual fund, you can only use so much leverage and you can't do a lot of fancy stuff, okay? That means that may impact your outcome, right?
Sure.
In addition, I mean, so when you think about alternatives also, it's helpful to think about maybe they are different beta or market exposures,
right?
Or they are skill, right?
Sure.
And the skill can migrate to higher fee illiquid investments. More liquid investments, there probably has been a drain of skill away from some of those, right? So what are these types of liquid strategies? There are some different betas that are available or different market exposures. Option overlay is one and was a successful strategy, I think, for a lot of people during a period of lower interest rates. There's a company here in Illinois, Calamos, that does that pretty well, and right. A lot of advisors know that ticker, CMNIX, pretty yeah. well. Not to advertise them, but you know, we have previously held that strategy.
Okay.
Reinsurance or catastrophe bonds are expensive and not available easily, but there are a number of mutual funds that do this. And you know, they're kind of like a reverse of an insurance contract, right? You receive premiums, and if there's some kind of catastrophic event, then you pay out. So last September, people paid out.
Sure.
But that's by definition uncorrelated with right. stock and bond markets. There are some sort of focused real estate strategies. There's some direct lending that people can access, you know, through certain platforms if they wish to do that. But then they take on that credit risk. You know, there are also royalty funds that exist that are streams of royalties from intellectual property or other things. And then there's cryptocurrency.
Right. So we can dive a little bit. This isn't a crypto episode,
right?
Right. But, you know, somewhat familiar with it. When we look at crypto, and is that, you know, in the institutional space, and your opinion, is that something we are investing in, or is it more of a retail moment right now?
We have chosen not to do so at Busey so far.
Yeah.
Part of that is that people come to Busey for more traditional investments sure. at lower costs that get them to their retirement outcome
right.
In a pretty transparent way. So I don't think people would expect Busey to be investing a lot in crypto, even if crypto was in its early days of future success. I just will point out that, say, the price performance of something like Bitcoin, right?
Right.
The big previous spike of Bitcoin was back in 2017 when it reached the whopping price of $20,000 per Bitcoin, $20,000 right, per right. Bitcoin. It then had another double peak in 2021 at, you know, 60 or 70. Mm-hmm. Okay. But it's back after falling back to 10 in the wake of the FTX episode, right?
Yes.
And some other episodes in the crypto market. Now we're back up to what, 28 today?
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not unsympathetic to one of the goals of crypto. There are many goals of crypto, maybe as many as people who hold crypto or created crypto. But one of the goals is a currency that is independent of central banks.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so when I talk about it to my parents, for instance, I say, well, look, why is it that the Federal Reserve should control the value of your savings? Right? Maybe you could be independent. Now, it happens to be that about 1/4 of crypto transactions are criminal, okay?
Right.
And as an unregulated space, which is its virtue but also its vice, you then have things like FTC and other blowups that occur, okay? So maybe they will become more regulated in the future. Maybe central banks will come up with digital currencies in the future that will conflict with crypto and make them irrelevant. But there are some very strong crypto advocates. And it could be something in the future that could work for some people. But I don't think in a structured investment program that's concerned about risks of a variety of different kinds, that's something that would be successful.
I think virtue or vice may be one of the better phrasings I've heard. I really like that. Okay. Like, I don't know. I just really like how that phrasing came together on crypto. It's a good way to look at it. So I do want to pivot before we're out of time today and get into hedge funds, right? Because sometimes we think alts, we just think hedge funds. And I was wondering if you could share, you know, with our crew, just some hedge fund strategies that you see, timing, liquidity, things like that, asset allocation within. And what's attractive to y'all right now, or what are you looking at?
We don't use a lot of, we invest much more in private equity, private debt, real estate, and real assets.
Sure.
In illiquid alternatives more than we invest in hedge funds at this point in time. That could change at some point in the future. I've been investing in hedge funds for clients or for myself for 20 years, so I know a little bit about it. And even though we don't implement that hugely here at the moment,
sure.
Right? In terms of assets in hedge fund strategies, about half of hedge fund assets are in equity-like strategies,
right.
Which is kind of blows my mind because it's not that alternative, right?
It's really not. Nor is it hedging.
Right. Well, although
I guess it could with
if it was truly market neutral, then fine. Okay.
Right.
Or that the long short had not a lot of bias or correlation or beta to market. But
sure.
There's a lot of beta embedded in these types of equity funds. The most successful hedge funds have been multi-strategy, which I think makes a lot of sense. Like the Citadels of the world, for instance. Why does that make sense? Because there's a highly intelligent, incredibly skilled investor at the center of a complicated portfolio,
yes.
Who knows what's going on in those active strategies,
yes.
And allocates that risk capital. Okay,
sure.
That's a very successful model because and has trumped the sort of hedge fund to fund model, or maybe people assembling hedge fund portfolios for themselves because that person is so knowledgeable and so expert. Right.
Yeah.
There are other strategies. There's equity. There's debt.
Right.
There are
right.
niche strategies
sure.
that are successful. It's really the hedge fund universe is really more about skill than a different type of market exposure typically. And there has been a bit of a brain drain of people in the investment business to successful hedge funds who are skilled. And so I think you can expect that skill will continue to redound. The problem with a lot of hedge fund strategies is that when they are successful, take say Renaissance Capital,
sure.
Out in Long Island, right? And James Simons and his people. The original people who built that firm and many of those strategies no longer take outside capital in their most successful vehicle, Medallion, right? There are still some people who have that access, but it's hard to get the really good stuff, okay?
Right.
So even for financial advisors who can access hedge funds either through those companies directly or through some of the platforms like iCapital
sure.
and others, they're generally broader-based strategies that may not necessarily be as successful as the really good stuff.
Yeah.
But multi-strategy's been successful, and there's a universe of potential strategies in equity and debt and even more alternative-type areas like global macro or niche strategies like relative value or other types of approaches where skilled people are trying to do difficult things. But at the end of the day, the greatest difficulty, I think, with alternative investing is its level of complexity for the investor, right?
Right.
You know, it's the most difficult thing we do when we have to describe to our clients, why do you hold this? Why does it make sense for me? And how do you determine whether it's successful? Because there's a lot of stuff going on in alternative type portfolios. Either it's a different type of market exposure that we have to explain to them, they can understand. Or whether it's tools and techniques that they're not as familiar with, usually using derivatives, leverage,
right.
and other things, or whether it's basically a play on skill, and that requires a lot of trust.
It does.
Okay.
And I think to that, and I want to close today with just sort of a question we're asking everybody. So a financial advisor, agent, stockbroker, right? Someone in that CFP, CHFC professional has a client that wants to invest beyond stocks and bonds. What should that advisor's next steps be? What's your thoughts on that?
I think it would be good for an advisor to consult some of these platforms that exist to redistribute true alternative product. One of the issues that's occurred basically since the financial crisis is there was a creation of alternative, liquid alternative approaches.
Yes.
And if you go, the first step for a lot of advisors is to go to Morningstar, right?
Sure.
But a lot of the strategies that are listed and categorized by that company as liquid alternative just haven't been that successful. They're sort of the paler versions of true alternatives. I think you know, the platforms like iCapital and Case and others that remarket both hedge funds and illiquid private investments are getting more to the true alternative portion of that. However, it requires an investment of time and expense. So I think those platforms are a good place to start.
Well, Derek, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate having you.
Okay. Thank you, Craig.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to Land and Everything Else. For more information on alternative investing, find us on your favorite social media platform using the links in our show notes. Thank you to the production team behind the podcast, PodPony. If you're ready to up your podcast game, visit podpony.com to saddle up and learn more. I'm Dr. Craig Lemoyne. You can find me at Higher Ed Craig, and this is the Land and Everything Else podcast. We'll see you again real soon.